Welcome to the Mountain Bike Podcast presented by GMBN. And this week we've got Iago Garay, who's a Spanish enduro racer riding for the Santa Cruz SRAM team. He's a world traveller, super stylish and fast on his bike. And if you don't already, make sure you get over and follow him on Instagram, where you can see just how stylish he is, but also how he promotes his Dyed Bro business. That's Do You Even Drift Bro? As well as promoting sustainable living and charities. Any racer who's raced the Andes Pacifico like myself know Iago for riding the whole of the race with a Bluetooth speaker, blasting tunes to bring a party everywhere he goes. So, Iago, where are you?
I'm back in Madrid at my mother's house in Spain, and we're on the day five of the country's lockdown. So
how did, have you been, were you in Spain when this all kicked off, or did you have to travel home?
I arrived back to Spain the day it started.
Okay. And how was it communicated? Was it via the government? Was it the news were telling you you're locked down?
Yeah. It was the government's been basically going live every day, sometimes multiple times, and just saying what the measurements were being made and all the different news about the spread of the virus and the crisis. And I guess the day they announced the lockdown, it was it broke all the records for live television with like 20 million people watching TV watching the speech, eager to know what. Like, there had been rumors going around for like 2 or 3 days. Like, everybody had that friend that worked in politics that was like, oh yeah, my friend told me they're shutting down the country in 2 days, blah, 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 blah. So everybody was kind of expecting it anyway, I think.
Yeah. So that is, you know, it feels like this is all coming our way. It seems to be traveling west through Europe and the US, and we are a little bit behind. But when that was communicated, that was that everything you were told? No social gatherings, you know, you're not outside to ride your bikes, of course.
It had been, it's all been progressively being more like radical. So like they at first, like everywhere, like you can see, like now that I think Spain is one of the first ones after Italy, you can see how every country is doing exactly the same steps. They're just copying each other. And like, so at first we're like, oh, try to avoid contact, wear a mask if you're sick, blah, blah, blah. And then they were like, maybe don't go out that much. And then they were like, oh, we're closing all the restaurants and all the like cinemas and stuff because you guys are not listening to us and you're still doing the same. And, you know, so little by little, they started like making it more serious. And it's been it was kind of expected. For me, I was kind of doing self-isolation for a long time since I knew the threat was, it was a big threat that they were going to close borders or like the virus was, it was a real thing. So I really wanted to make it to the first two EWSs. So I was trying to stay as healthy as possible. And I was basically just driving from my house to the mountain, training by myself and then coming back home and trying to avoid every option of, every opportunity of getting infected. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I've just been pretty lonely on my house for the last, I'd say, like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I guess that's the way it's going. Yeah, for all of us. Initially, when the news broke of, you know, the EWS being postponed, initially, I think people were, you know, a bit gutted, I suppose, but that seems like old news now. It seems much more serious. I mean, you know, it's bad news, of course, for us, the fans, for you, the racers, for the organisers. But I think it soon sort of seemed pretty insignificant when we're seeing what's going on with the rest of the world.
Yeah, I think they did the right decision for sure. And it was really good that they made it with enough time for people to react. And I don't think anyone had already traveled to the location. So like, I think it was good so that everybody could like adapt and react with enough time. So I think maybe at first some people were bummed about it. Well, everybody was bummed about it, but they were angry about it. And now I hope everybody realizes that it was a the best decision they could have taken. And now we have the end of the season in Chile, which I think is going to be super exciting and really good venue to close the season. Good excuse to take a couple extra weeks after that for the vacation. So I'm stoked, honestly. Like, I think it's the best outcome could have come out of this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, sort of, you know, as the whole thing has spread, I think we've seen the people that maybe have wanted to bury their head in the sand, it's become too big. So, you know, as the measures have become bigger, people are starting to learn about it. But what have you seen with, like, the riding community in Spain? You know, what you've seen on Instagram and what are your friends doing? Are they just sort of, you know, starting to go a bit mad, or is it a bit of, you know, sort of sober resignation to what's happening?
So, like, the first day of lockdown, you could see so many people that were like, oh yeah, lockdown, they're not going to stop me from riding my bike. And so many people went out and rode their road bikes and mountain bikes and stuff, and the police had to send everyone out. Like, I think the government was already expecting it, so they had a lot of people out there telling them to go back home. And the main thing that a lot of people didn't realize, and I even saw, like, on Instagram, some people were commenting, like, because in Spain you're allowed to go to work, right? So people were like, oh, but you're an athlete, like, your job is to go out and ride your bike. What people are not realizing is the severity is that in Madrid the hospitals are in the absolute max. There's no room for any more patients. The doctors are completely overwhelmed. So imagine you go out, yeah, you're going to ride your bike, you're by yourself, isolation, no possibility of transmission, but you crash and you need to get taken out of the mountain. You are using resources that right now are very much needed for people with the virus. And an ambulance is going to have to come get you and maybe take you to the hospital. If it's not that serious, you're driving to the hospital by yourself or someone's driving you there. But then hospitals are absolutely maxed. So you're not a priority unless you're dying. You're not a priority. So you're just going to be waiting there for a very long time, super exposed to all the disease and all the viruses. And then I was listening to this podcast from someone, and he was like, from a doctor, and they're like, you are being very selfish if you're going out on your bike. And because if you get injured, the doctors are going to have to make a decision and be doing it to save this 30-year-old by taking him to surgery because he broke his back or whatever, or do we keep taking care of this 70-year-old that's on a breather and on a breathing help? And obviously, they're like, as doctors, are gonna choose the younger person. So it's bad of saying it like this, but you're sentencing someone to death if by just going out on your bike. You think it's harmless, but you could potentially putting someone else's life at risk. And that's the whole thing around this virus, I think, that people are not realizing. And it's not about if you're going to get infected, or if you're going to, like, just going to go on a bike ride by yourself, is how much you can hurt other people, like the most vulnerable ones. And that's the people we need to protect by staying at home.
Yeah, well, I totally agree. And I think hopefully that's becoming more apparent to the people that aren't listening. But yeah, I guess we're, you know, in the UK, we're looking to Spain, France and Italy and seeing what's happening over there. And yeah, I've seen the pictures of the people on road bikes being pulled over by police. And you're also hearing the stories of the nurses in the hospitals and how hard it is, basically, that, yeah, they're making some really, really serious choices that we, as a mountain bike community, really don't need to make any harder. So yeah, totally agree. While some people might think it's cool to be out in the woods, I think, you know, there is no risk worth it at the moment. Are you training in the house? Are you on the turbo trainer?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I don't own a turbo trainer because I don't like those things. I think it's better just to go out, even if it's really bad weather, or if it's just the worst case, I just go to the gym and sit on a spin bike or a watt bike or something. So I've ordered one and I'm waiting for it because I'm expecting this situation to extend for at least 2 or 3 more weeks, unfortunately. So right now I'm just doing, you know, like, trying to make the best use. I luckily have some weights and TRX, and I'm doing, like, my coach is sending me some exercises to do. So we're, like, cleaning up the living room and putting some good music on and just working out there. And who have a set upstairs. My mom was doing laps of the stairs, going up and down the house yesterday for 20 minutes. And yeah, we're just trying to, try to stay busy. Really try to get something positive out of this. Like, I'm spending a lot of time with my mom. We're cooking together. We're having long conversations. We're finally fixing all that stuff in the house that we've been postponing for a very long time. You know, like, we have nowhere to go now. We need to get it done. You know, it's a great time to finish that book that I've been carrying around the world for the last year. So yeah, like, stay busy. My company, Diet Bro, we're trying to, like, you know, keep our employees healthy and figuring out ways of, like, keep providing to the clients, and but still, like, you know, being safe, and some other cool ideas that I think we're gonna launch very soon. So yeah, trying to stay as busy as possible, and definitely trying to keep a very positive mindset, because it's easy to, like, just think that this is, like, you feel miserable and you can't ride your bike and stuff, but there's definitely way it could be way worse. And, you know, like, hopefully we can take some positives out of this and realize and appreciate more the good thing we have with mountain biking and being able to ride your bike, and, you know,
yeah, absolutely,
realize all the things we don't need.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see sort of what it does to the industry as well. I guess, you know, at the moment there's people like yourself ordering a turbo trainer, and I'm sort of doing the same things. I mean, we've seen the stock market's taking big hits, but I sort of wonder what's going to happen to the bike industry. Of course, that's not as important as people's health, but it's interesting to see what is going to happen.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be tough for sure.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I guess we'll move it on, I guess, to more positive things.
Yeah.
Talk a bit more about mountain biking. Obviously, you know, we spoke about Chile already, which was going to be, well, round two of the EWS. We had Colombia first, then Chile. But you've spent quite a lot of time over there, as I have a couple of times for Andy Pacifico. You were back there this year. How was that?
Man, it's amazing. You know, like, Chile, it feels like a second home for me. I've been going for, I think it's 7 years now. And it's just, I have so many friends. People are so friendly there, and they just welcome you. They open their houses to you. They truly want you to have the best experience possible. They're just so proud of their country and what they have to offer. And they have to offer some of the best mountain biking in the world, no doubt. Like, we were lucky enough to have Santa Cruz fly us there earlier than on the Pacifico race, so we could spend a couple days, like, I think it was like 7 days, road tripping through Chile, and we hit some amazing spots. We had such a good time. So I just
what was the what's that place at Nevados, what's it called, Nevados de Chillán?
Nevados de Chillán, yeah, that's where the first time we went to Chile for the EWS, that's where we race. And it's mind-blowing, like, for people, I imagine even for people from the UK, it's even more mind-blowing. It's just, all the dirt is just, it's all, it's a very active, there's an active volcano right there in the bike park. So all the dirt, it's just volcanic. It's just, imagine, like, beach sand, but lighter, or, like, a very heavy dust, and then imagine half a meter of it on top of the trail. So you're literally floating the whole time. Like, the whole time you're floating, and because of the water and how easy it is to erode, like, it just, the water just shapes all the turn to be, like, really smooth and round and perfect. So it's just such an insane different type of riding that you can experience anywhere else, that it makes it so fun.
Yeah, sounds amazing. Who were you out there with?
So I went with Romain Polan, Loose Dog, and Mitch Rapalato, which unfortunately he got sick on the first day, so he didn't get to do much riding. But we had Adrian Marcoux taking some photos and Sam Needham filming. So it was a sick crew, and we had really good time, you know, just sessioning bits of trail and riding, and, you know, just enjoying all the good things that Chile has to offer. You know, we were farther south from Nevados in this place called Pucón, which is one of the, like, top spots for the summer vacation for Chilean people, yeah, which was right at the time we were there.
That's all volcanoes and lakes.
Yeah, yeah. It's like this massive volcano with a glacier on top, like, and a huge lake right at the bottom of the volcano. And the lake's basically like, it has like a beach and everything. And there's this huge, like pretty big, decent sized town with like loads of bars and like clubs. And there's so much young people. And it's just perfect. You have everything you need right there. You have like insane, really long mountain bike trails. You have the lake, you have the nightlife, you have good food. It's epic.
Yeah, sounds rad. It was on the list of places that I was hoping to get out to, you know, this year, probably before Andes Pacifico, but it didn't happen for me because I had a baby, my wife had a baby, so I sort of couldn't do that trip this year. Yeah, thanks, dude. But yeah, it looks awesome. We had a great time before Andes Pacifico last year. We went down to Coyhaique. Oh, stayed with a guy called Garbo and rode some amazing trails down in Patagonia. So yeah, sort of my eyes have been open to that sort of Chilean riding, you know, from, you know, Andes Pacifico is definitely a certain type of riding, and that sort of super high up.
Yeah, so soft. Different.
Yeah, and then down in Patagonia, it was just completely different, but amazing place. I'd love to go back. Well, definitely want to go back. I'd love to take family as well, actually. Such a cool place. But you obviously get to travel a lot. Where are your favorite places to ride?
Chile, for sure. Chile is one of the top destinations. I really enjoy the whole Pacific Northwest in the US and like the BC area. And I don't know, like Rotorua in New Zealand is just super good. All pretty different type of terrains, but just really good and just so many trails. All of those places have such huge trail networks that it's great for going on like on a trip because you get to experience so much in just a couple of days.
Yeah. Did I see you've been spending quite a lot of time in Seattle?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been going there a lot. It's really good. Like, I don't think anytime I tell anyone that Seattle is amazing for riding, they're like, really? Like, people only hear about Bellingham, which is just an hour and 20 minutes away from Seattle. But there's like really like so many trail centers and like trails around the city, just like 45 minute drive from Seattle. You can find a lot of really, really, really good riding. There's a big trail building community there too. So there's always fresh trails and their trails are getting fixed. And it's very similar style as Bellingham or Whistler, but it has way less traffic, so trails just stay really good. So it's a destination for sure.
Bellingham's on the list of places definitely as well. I know Jill Kintner. I think she's originally from Seattle area at least.
And yeah, she's from just outside the city. And Jill and Breen live over there, and it's awesome. Every time I go to Bellingham, I try to get a ride in with Breen, and that's the best guy you can get out there.
Yeah, I bet. Have you ridden in the UK?
Not much, really. If only in Scotland, in the Tweed Valley with Mark, Scott, and with the EWS races over there. So it's still definitely on the list. There's a bunch of places that I want to check out.
Yeah, Tweed Valley is really good. Yeah, next year there's another EWS round there, so I guess you'll get to see a bit more of that. Mark Scott, is he your official teammate? He rides Santa Cruz, but is it the same team?
Yeah. So Mark and I make the enduro racing team. And yeah, we just have different clothing sponsors, but we're all in the same structure.
Okay, cool. What bike are you riding at the moment then?
I'm riding the Mega Tower. Been riding it from the beginning of last year.
Yeah, so that's how much travel is that?
That is 160 rear, and right now I'm running a 170 fork up front and 29-inch wheels.
Nice. So is that the only bike you have, or do you have like a, you know, cross-country bike, downhill bike?
Yeah, I have a couple other bikes. I have a 5010, which is a 27.5 130 mil travel, which is more like a play bike. I use it to, I don't know, sometimes go to jump trails and, I don't know, a little bit of everything. And then I have a Hightower, which is a 29-inch wheel and 140 rear travel, 150 front. But I mainly ride the Mega Tower most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, that's something for me. When I was racing properly, it felt like it was quite nice to spend a lot of time on one bike, just because you get super used to it, so that when you jump back on it, it just, you know, feels right. Is that what you do, or do you spend sort of an equal amount of time across bikes?
Yeah, well, like when the whole like dilemma about the 29-inch wheels and 27.5, and nobody knew which was better, and we did like that year, we did some races on 27.5 wheels and some races on 29. I just figured out that any advantage you could gain from changing your bike that much, you lose it from not being used to that bike. And I think it's just better to just always ride or race your same bike, because then you're just going to be so used and so comfortable on that bike that you actually have that advantage. And you can always, you know, just change your settings or whatever to like adapt your bike a little bit more to that trail. But just changing too much your bike, I think it's worse.
Yeah, totally. So what about the Enduro World Series? You've been racing that for quite a while now, haven't you?
Yeah, so I raced, the first year I only raced two of the stops, but since then I've raced every single
all right, cool.
Race, yeah, for the last experience. Yeah, 6 years.
How have you seen it develop?
I think it's been really good. I think it feels like, it's looking back now, it feels like it's been pretty organically growing, kind of like more people coming, more support from brands. Even the tracks have changed a lot. Like, we used to have insanely long days and like really tough stages with a lot of pedaling, and I remember always complaining a lot about those. And feels like nowadays, like, we barely get like such long climbs in the stages, and it's more about like, you know, like pretty technical stages and very long and hard, like physically, not precisely because of how much you have to pedal, but like for how long and how rough there are. And I don't know, I think it's a great spot. We're still like, it's still a really tight community. It still feels like everybody's friends over there. Like, you still get to like chat with your friends when the day ends, and you hang out, and then I don't know, you play soccer or football and in the pits with them while waiting for the next stage to open. I don't know. I think it's a really, really cool vibe. It's basically like traveling with all your friends around the world and riding bikes.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds good to me. It's funny. I look at, you know, I go to Whistler quite often, you know, for Crankworx, and you see the EWS, you see that top of the world stage. And I look at it and think, that's just not something that I would want to race all that way down. It's like you say, it's not necessarily that pedally, just super physical. That must be hard work.
Yeah, that one's always pretty tough. Like, you almost want, like, you're almost, I would almost wish there was a little bit more pedaling, so you get time to recover your arms and your hands from so much high speed, like bumpy riding. But it's just, honestly, it's so fun, because you get into it, you know, like there's so much time for so much stuff to happen. So much things can go wrong. But then at the same time, you're like, oh, you have so much time to like make up for those mistakes. And it's good for a change. Like, you know, like, we're not racing 20-minute stages every race, you know, it's once a year. And that's the other cool thing about EWS, that there's not two races that are the same, even if you go to the same venue. So I think it keeps it really fresh and exciting for us every time we go to a new place.
Yeah, totally. Finale Ligure has always been the last round of the year, and you know, it was the Trophy of Nations last year, and we try and go to that as well. Such a cool place to be, and it does feel like a nice tie, you know, a nice place to finish the season, where everyone's, you know, going to the bars, you know, eating outside is really nice. And of course, that was different last year. How was the Trophy of Nations? Looked like a pretty fun race.
It was honestly so much fun. Like, to be fair, like, coming into it, nobody really knew what to expect. We're all like, what's the sense of having a world championship that is by teams and not individual, and like, what's even the point of being here, you know? Like, so everybody, like, obviously we had just finished the weekend before the EWS, so it was wrapped up, so basically everybody's job was done, really. So we all went to finale. We had like 5 or 6 days before even practice started, and you know, like, we were in finale, you say, like, you're at the beach, there's really good food, a lot of restaurants, and you're pretty much, you're just days away from vacation. So it just, it felt like a little teaser of vacation, you know, for us. And it was super fun, like, coming into it, like, we would go ride with other people and just you know, hang out on the beach, go for lunch all together. And then when the time of the race came, for me at least, like, the Spanish team, we had a pretty good team, and like, we all knew each other from before, and we decided to approach the race more like as a team, like, try to work together and get some tactics and strategy on the stages, and, you know, pass each other and like try to use the strengths of each rider to benefit the team. So we'll have, like, if the stage was more physically, we put someone in front, and if it was really steep and technical, put a different guy in front. And it was, in the end, like, just racing with someone so close and going so fast is such an experience, like, so cool. Like, every time we get to the bottom of the stage, we all just be like shouting of excitement, just like, yeah, that was so sick, you know. It's just, it's different, because you never get, it's always you, right? Like, on biking, mountain biking, enduro, like, it's always you, there's nothing else. You're not, whatever you do, it's affecting you. But like, now, like, you're nervous because you don't want to mess up, because then you're like messing it up for your teammates. And, but then if you all do good, like, you all feel good because you accomplished something together. And I don't know, I've never played team sports or anything, so it was like pretty refreshing to be involved in a team.
It must be pretty gnarly though. Like, you know, I quite like going to a bike park and doing laps with your friends and riding quite close, but when you're racing really close to two other people, you know, and you can't see what's coming up quite so well because you're right behind someone, that must be pretty gnarly.
It is. You have to trust the guy in front of you, basically, because you're doing whatever they're doing. There's very, very small room for to react about, like, if there's a rock and the guy in front of you jumps it, you have to jump it. And I don't know, like, you know, we got one run of practice on each stage, so you don't know perfectly all the trails, so you have to trust the guy in front of you. And at the same time, that's giving you a little bit of margin, you know, if you seen how, like, you get to see head, if he's slowing down, you can see him slowing down, and then you can start slowing down before, and you're not that out of control into it, coming into a corner. And it's there's some advantages and some scary parts about it, but I think overall is, I would recommend 100%. Like, I think we need to make more team races happen.
Do you think it's going to be more serious the next time we do it, where people, you know, like you said, it was the end of the year last time, the championship, the EWS championship had been wrapped up already. Do you think, because now people know what it's like, they'll go in a bit more, you know, fired up, maybe it's not going to be quite so relaxed?
I think for sure people are going to take it more seriously. I mean, I think I speak for everyone that when we saw the American team with the rainbow jerseys, we're like, I want that, you know, like, that's a pretty cool jersey. So I think that everybody's going to take it pretty serious, even more seriously. But still, like, I think it's still it's still going to be really good vibes, and, you know, like, everything. Once again, we're in finale. It's a great spot. It's pretty relaxing. And it just means people are, like, I think more teams that didn't in the past are going to work together, try to, like, you know, have some strategies or figure out what's the best way of having everyone given the 100% on each stage or at the end of the day.
That's it. They might be relaxed, but rainbow stripes are rainbow stripes, yeah, whichever way you get them. Who was on the Spanish team?
It was Gabriel Torralba he's from north of Spain, from Huesca, really close from where the EWS stop used to be. And then we had Edgar Carvalho, which I've been racing with for, I don't know, like 15 years. He's always been racing downhill, but he started doing more enduro, and he's really good. I think this year he's made a switch 100% to enduro, and both of them are on their Bea team now. So,
Yeah, I've seen those guys.
Yeah, if we end up being on the same team next year, I think it's going to be even better because those two guys are going to be really used to ride with each other.
Yeah, that's cool. So how did you get into mountain bikes?
It was all through my father. My father's always been a very active, and he's always loved the outdoors. He's been a mountaineer and then a skier. He did some paragliding, and he's always stayed busy. And I remember this one time, the first time I ever got a bike, we're going to the local hardware store, which they just literally sold everything. They sold from like lawnmowers to nuts and bolts to bikes and I don't know, camping gear. And there was this pink bike with training wheels just sitting there. And we went there to get something, and then I just jumped on the bike and started doing laps of this on the shop. And the time came to leave the store, and I said I wasn't leaving without the bike, basically. So they just had to buy it. And I think that's love at first sight. And then, you know, like our family activity always was just going on bike rides on the weekends. Funny enough, I didn't like them. I always wanted to be like, I just want to stay at home. You know, I've been at school all week. I was going to school from 9 to 5. So like, and we didn't have cable. So I never got to see cartoons on TV. So my main concern was that, hey, my other only option of watching cartoons is on the weekends in the morning. And if we're riding our bikes, I'm missing out on all the cartoons.
So yeah, there's plenty of time for that now.
Yeah.
You can catch up on your cartoons.
Yeah. But we started riding with like a really big bike shop in Madrid called Bicimania. And they had a big club, and they did all these club rides on the weekends. And funny enough, they had the biggest downhill team at the time. So the one time they were like, hey, we're having this we're going to this downhill race that they're gonna have a kids downhill track, and I was like, oh well, downhill sounds pretty good, like you don't have to climb. That's the part that I like the least about mountain biking, so I'll give it a try. And I tried it, and I loved it, and my dad loved that I loved biking, so he was like all in. From there on, we went to race every weekend, I think, that year, and until now, just been racing. Nice. And I was 11 years old back then when I did my first downhill race.
Wow. That's pretty young to get into racing, to be fair. What's the scene like in Madrid? Is there plenty of places to go ride and lots of people riding mountain bikes?
Yeah, there's so a lot of people think Madrid is like super flat and deserty, but just like 35 minutes drive from the city center, you have a huge mountain range with peaks of around 2,000 meters high. And there's a lot of riding. There's a lot of riding spots. There's a lot of people that ride, but unfortunately, we're having problems with there's like a national park that covers the best part of the mountain biking in Madrid. And very recently, they just approved the plan where you're not legally allowed to ride your bike outside dirt roads. So basically all single tracks are off limits for mountain bikes, which is really, really terrible. So basically, like, mountain bike has been criminalized in the best part of Madrid. You can get a ticket if you go and they find you riding on the single track. So it's a little bit shitty, but there's a bunch of people trying to work out a solution for this, and hopefully they will realize that it's not about prohibiting something, it's about regulating it and get a sustainable mountain biking that's already working in a lot of parts in the country and in the world. And just, it's more about like building trails that don't get eroded as much from the water, and fixing the trails that get broken. And I think it will come. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I guess there's lots of, you know, models to show them, great examples of how it can work. But yeah, good luck with that one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Let's see what happens.
So who are the Spanish riders that you looked up to when you were young racing mountain bikes?
So when I started racing, when I was 11 years old, I think it's probably was the golden age for downhill racing in Spain. We had the Mister Bros, we had Ivan Olego, we had David Vasquez, Bernard Guardia, all of those guys got on World Cup podiums. Oscar Saiz, Pascual Canales, like all those guys, just like they were kicking ass in their World Cup circuit. And so like I always looked up to those guys, and luckily now I can call all of them friends, and I've been able to share rides with them, and it's super cool. But yeah, definitely all those guys, you know, they were winning World Cups. Tommy won a World Cup, Ivan won a World Cup, and you know, a bunch of podiums. It was
crazy. That, like you say, there was a lot of Spanish back in the day. That big team, was it the MSC team, probably a bit later on, but you know, we used to come over, and you know, obviously Vigo was on the World Cup circuit for a couple of years, so it did seem like it was a, you know, super strong nation for racing downhill. And it, you know, even I've seen a picture of Tommy Misser recently. Was it a Masters World Champs, I think, looking super lean, racing cross country for Aubert?
Yeah, he raced cross country Master World Champs one day, and the next day he raced downhill Master World Champs with his enduro bike and won both.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's gnarly.
So he's still a beast. He's still riding. I don't know. He's probably running even more than back in the day.
Yeah, he looks like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Right, so you've talked about it a little bit already, but do you even drift, bro? Should I say, what is that?
Yeah, that's a small company that I started with a couple friends, and we originally started it as a t-shirt company. We just my friend Gary Perkin took a photo of me drifting with one hand and put underneath the caption was hashtag Do You Even Drift, Bro, and that kind of stuck. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, we should make some t-shirts. So we literally made some t-shirts at my friend's office. He had a heat press and a vinyl cutter. So we just went on and did it. And then in the meantime, he was making some frame protectors for my bikes, just clear ones, just to wrap my bikes to protect them from scratches and all that shuttling action. And then one day I was just like, I think I was riding, I don't know where I was, and I was like, man, it was super cool. We could print some stuff on this and like put, I don't know, like some camo or something. So I called my friend, I'm like, hey, do you think we could do this? And he's like, yeah, that's super easy. I just need to put it on this other machine and we can print on it. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, we should do it. So yeah, we made like a couple of just like top tubes with like camo pattern on them and started giving away to some friends and stuff. And it seemed like it started to catch on. Like, people were like, huh, this is cool. Like, nobody else was making, you know, patterns on frame protectors. Even frame protectors weren't that big. This is back in 2016, I think. And, yeah, we started, like, little by little. We were manufacturing everything in Madrid at my friend's office. So it was really easy. We can control the production and make as many changes as we want. So we started adding more pieces and modifying stuff so it'd fit more bikes, and then we started coming up with more designs, and little by little we started building like a website and started growing, and now we're at a point that likely we have a website that works pretty good. We've been able to hire our first employee at the end of last year, and we have a bunch of distributors all around the world, so we're working on, yeah, on making getting more distributors over there and improving our products. Right now it's really exciting. We're working on finding a way of creating all the frame protectors with recycled plastic, which I think it's super exciting. I really want to get rid of as much plastic as we can and make it as efficient as possible as well. So that'll be really cool once we finally find a way, but it's getting close.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. And I guess you've got some time on your hands for working on that side of stuff as well.
Yeah.
Which, you know, every plenty of time. Has, yeah, some sort of silver lining. But anyway, right, I think I'll wrap it up now, Iago. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope things sort of iron themselves out sooner rather than later and we can all get back outside.
Yeah. It'll all be gone pretty soon, I'm sure. We'll come out stronger.